mind. Tossing fire, leaving Babylon, I'm trying, trying to escape this futile. Who child? This country jungle is too wild. That's why we got more than two styles. To adapt in the situation, too child. And though the road is rocky, I'm ready to try the next mile to bring sight to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Jungleist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven, fire from his lips. Burning slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and the current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge, but we as a people can turn this around." Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom." And with all that, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there, or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for an Awakening Media is there, always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening Media. Interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the B.B. Toomey. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Different African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 7:07 here in the city of Philadelphia on this, rainy Sunday evening, or getting ready to rain Sunday evening. And we have three special guests joining us this evening in conversation. Educator, filmmaker, Professor Carl Tone Jones will be with us. Activist and organizer, Brother Oba Olainka, will be with us also. And activist sister Lavinia Davis will be with us. We'll be discussing various topics that's both national and local that's pertinent to our struggle here in this United States. And we'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072, spelled new as in numerous, on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 7:12 in the city of Philadelphia. And before we get started with our program, I want to welcome in my co-hosts, Philadelphia activists and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing okay, I guess I'll say. Everything's moving along real fun. And I'm looking forward to our conversation tonight. With the guest tonight is always interesting because they have allowed me to make myself familiar and learn and exchange with them over time. So just to get some more points of view and develop some more ideals or even direction. I kind of always look to have that going on.
Yeah, well, you know, it's good to have these conversations. I'm glad we can have them on air tonight. Anytime you're in Philadelphia and you see anything grassroots going on, any events happening in the neighborhoods, you can always see these three people that we're going to have on tonight and a few more, but you're going to always see one of them on with us tonight involved in something going on in Philadelphia in the grassroots level. Tonight we have a filmmaker and educator, Professor Carl Tone Jones is with us, activist and organizer, has been on several times, Brother Oba Olienka, and activist Sister Lavinia Davis. All three are with us this evening, and I want to bring them in with us to start the
conversation. And as you bring them in, should I say that we should be honored with the Queen Lavinia, because we've been trying to get her to interact with us for a while, and this is the first opportunity she's been able to do it. So looking forward to that exchange also.
Well, she's on with us. I think she heard you. Sister Lavinia, are you on?
Hi. Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm grateful for this opportunity and to be able to have the discussion with all of you, because I respect everyone on this call. So thank you for having me.
Okay. And we got a little interference with somebody in the background there. Somebody got a little, it's a little busy going on in somebody's background, but Professor
My bad. That's probably me, Brother Carl. I mean, Brother Elliot. Brother Elliot, that's probably me. I'm sorry, Brother Elliot. Elliot, Brother Richard.
No problem.
Brother Carl Tone Jones. Great to be with you all. Thank you. So very honored to always be on Time for Awakening with my family, my Philly family. And, you know, when you called me today and said, hey, you know, what's up? I said, all right. You know, I'm there. You know, you always got my support. And, you know, I think it's going to be a great, great conversation and dialogue with all of you. I'm looking forward to it.
And educator and filmmaker Professor Carl Tone Jones is with us also. Professor.
Yes, yes, yes. Peace and black power to everybody. You know, Brother Rich, you know, the nice seeing you. Out and about, brother's always out and about.
I know he is.
Yes,
I don't know how he get the energy.
Brother
Rick is everywhere.
My good brother Oba, and my beautiful sister, powerful sister, Sister Lavinia, who, you know, I have the utmost respect for, because you want to talk about a queen warrior. We got one right here.
Yes,
on the
yes.
air tonight.
Thank you, Father. Thank you.
Before we get started with things this evening, I want all our guests to kind of give our audience some of the descriptions of what you're doing in the community and what you're doing lately, because sometimes it's always different, especially with Brother Obai. He always has things going, and even the professor always has different things going on. So talk about some of the things that you're involved in now. But let's start with Sister Vinny first, the ladies first. Sister, tell us a little bit about some of the things you've been active in up in the North Philly area.
Okay, so I am currently the Director of Mental Health and Wellness at the North Philly Peace Park. I'm located at that site, but we have two sites now with the Philly Peace Park. And what we do is really work to really fulfill the needs of the people by creating and actually implementing the solutions, you know, that will help us prepare, develop, fulfill, and sustain, you know, the needs that we have in the community, but not just in our community, but for Black people globally. So I specifically work on a lot of mental health things, because I think we have to really understand that our mental health, how we handle things, it affects our mood. It affects the way we handle stress, you know, how we make our choices. So, you know, I tend to create sacred spaces so people can do that. And, I mean, I work on different things, I guess, a lot of stuff. So that's really what we work to do at the North Philly Peace Park, making sure that we are implementing the solutions and not just talking about them.
Good, because we're going to touch on a lot of that tonight, because some of the subject matter that we the different subjects we're going to talk about, some of them deal directly, I feel, with the mental health of our communities. So I think that's a good area where we can come back into a little bit later on in the conversation. Professor Carl Tone Jones, the Independence Day Project, I know that you have another documentary either that you're working on, coming up soon, or it might be released right now. Talk about some of the projects that you've been working on.
No, the idea and the plans are underway for the second film. But, you know, we have to pump the brakes a little bit with COVID-19 and in terms of, like, fundraising, you know. But the idea is on the table for the second film, the second part in the series for the Independence Day Project. And this one, you know, we determined would be practical application. But as we are looking more and more about what's happening, you know, it sort of takes us back to the drawing board, because so many of the things that we discussed in terms of our preparedness, our level of preparedness that was necessary in the first film have come to fruition in 2020. And it's just amazing as to how accurate a lot of the things that were projected, even though we had no idea a pandemic was coming. We knew something was coming, but we had no idea a pandemic was coming. So, you know, right now we're trying to get back and look at and pull it apart piece by piece. And so that we'll be able to put the best propaganda out there, because that's what this is. This is propaganda to get our people prepared for what's to come, because these are some hard times facing us. And if we're not prepared for it, you know, this could be it. You know, we could literally be looking at a literal purge, you know, on a large scale. So it's very important for us to get, you know, to get these things together and get ourselves in order, because there's some things that are happening right now, like right in front of us. But because we're able to distract ourselves with, you know, other things, entertainment, you know, fashion and jewelry and all that other stuff, we're not really focusing on the 600-pound gorilla in the room right now.
So. Well, you know, that's going to be part of some of the conversations that we have this evening. Brother Oba, talk about some of the things going on with the African Independence Day Organization and the Urban Shaman.
Well, right now, we are planning by ear for 2021 to have not only our Pan-African Duke of Self Junkanoo, but to have the 17th Annual African Independence Day My Eyes Celebration. Once again, back at Malcolm X Park. Now, the tentative date, because of everything going on with this COVID plandemic, as you all well know, I call it a plandemic instead of a pandemic. The tentative date is Saturday, August 7th, which is the first Saturday in the month of August in 2021. But we're playing it by ear. We don't know what's going to happen. So really right now we're in fundraising mode, just getting ourselves prepared and ready for whatever happens. If it doesn't happen in 2021, of course, we'll do it again virtually, as we did it virtually this year. As you well know, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, as well as Brother Carl. And, of course, my sister Levine, if you know, were aware of what we did on Saturday, August the 1st this year. We did it virtually. So we're planning to do that again. And any other events that we may have, our Buy Black Marketplace, Pequon Celebration, even doing that virtual. So we're going with the technology and we're going with the climate of what is happening right now. But really, mainly what the African Independence Day Organizing Committee and Urban Shamans Productions is working on, we're really focused on our show. We started an internet radio show, which can be seen live every Tuesday on YouTube, called The Sonic Ngoma. Back in April, and we have had a wonderful, wonderful array of guests. Brother Carl has been on the show. I hope to get Sister Lavinia on the show as well. So we'll talk about that offline. It has been tremendous. We're now going on our 25th episode this Tuesday, where our guest will be Baba Hanif Shabazz, owner of the library up in West Philadelphia in the Overbrook section. Baba Hanif is a well-known to the city of Philadelphia as far as selling books, DVDs. He is a founder of Alden DVDs along with his wife, Sister Ayoko Shabazz. And he will be our guest this week. Our show comes on every Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. And you can go and check it out live on YouTube. We're on the Knowledge Radio Network, which is ran and founded by my good brother, Brother Knowledge Born Allah, who is originally from Newark, New Jersey, and now resides in Charlotte, North Carolina. And basically, he's our show engineer, and he puts us on live, myself, Brother Farouk Mayat, and Brother Kamur Haru, every Tuesday night. And it has been wonderful. We've had guests like Wise Intelligent, Four Righteous Teachers, to Mama Pam Africa. We've had Brother Carlton Jones on the show. We've had the hip hop group United Front African Insurrection Music on. We've had Richard Raw on. We've had Brother Tahir RBG, Brother Tim Samir Shabazz. We have had anybody and everybody. Marcus Klein, we've had on the show. We've had everybody so far, who really talks the same language that we talk, strive to live the same type of lifestyle that we try to live. And it has just been wonderful. So really, to ask me what we've been really doing, we've been doing the radio show every week, and it's growing in popularity, it's growing in listenership, it's growing in viewership. I'm very, very happy and very, very proud of what we do on our show. And we just want everybody to continue to tune in and support what it is that we do, much like what you and Brother Richard are doing on Time for Awakening, with our support and love that we have for you.
Brother, were you still there?
Yep.
Oh, okay. I heard a click. I didn't know whether I lost you. Before we kind of break off into different topics, Professor Jones, and anybody else can jump in also, because I know that you deal with education on the collegiate level and possibly on some of the lower levels, but I know on the collegiate level. Talk about how this the situation going on now with COVID-19 has affected our community. Do you think that we're taking advantage of trying to re-educate our children because everything is virtual now, and being that everything is virtual now, you're forced to not only do things online, but our parents, the parents of our children now, have access now to different ways where we can educate and also re-educate our children. Do you think it's been being taken advantage of by a lot of folks in the community, or what's your feelings on this?
No, it's not being taken advantage.
Okay.
No, brother. For the majority of people who look at it, you know, unfortunately, our people are used to being taken care of, are used to the nanny state. And so the mindset, you know, we're colonized people.
Okay.
And so as people are looking for the colonizers to continue to provide, you know, those services for which we become accustomed to, being provided for us, these resources and things of that nature. So there has been a slow crawl, very slow crawl to independent study, re-educating our own children. In fact, there's been a stronger push primarily to get the children back into the schools back under the control of the state. So, you know, what it comes down to, brother, is the programming. You know, the programming of this system, the matrix that we live in, has a very strong hold over the families, in particular the parents. And the work ethic that comes into, you know, to ownership, and that's what the nation building aspect of it all comes to, right? Ownership. This is not there, you know, collectively. In fact, if we take this back 160 years, I would be wondering if people, our people today, would be begging to get back on the plantations. Because theoretically speaking, that's what's happening today. And that's what's happening with our ability to take ownership and take control. We missed a tremendous opportunity throughout this COVID-19 experiment and so forth to take and regain control of our community, our resources, and the education of our children. And it's a very sad state of affairs, because I'm not sure if we'll ever have that opportunity again to take it, as everything else was shut down. You know, now all the distractions are up and running, sports is back, the events are happening, the social clubs are picking up and percolating again. People are running away from the responsibility of raising the children, and therefore, once again, thrust them into a system that we already know doesn't work. And in fact, works to the detriment of our community and the detriment of our future. And, you know, as we've gone over many times with the school to prison pipeline, you know, I can go on, but I'll just stop right there and just give you that. No, it's not happening, brother. We're abstaining from our responsibility to be responsible holders and handlers of power in regards to children.
Sister Lavinia, from your perspective, I personally don't know whether you have any young children, but I'm quite sure if you don't have any children, you have children in your family. How has this been working as far as some of the children that you've come in contact with? Now, probably at Peace Park, if any children come over there to participate in any things, or some of the urban gardening and things like that, I'm quite sure all the protocols are there, the social distancing and things of that nature. But how is this working as far as some of the children that you've been in contact with?
Okay, so for the park, we looked at ourselves as essential workers, because we are. And for us, we had to step up our game, which meant that we had to be on the land even more. We had to roll out and extend our services, the process and everything, so which always includes education. And what we found is that our children, they have always looked to us as role models, meaning Black people for guidance that's in our community. So when they see us growing food, and they're told, hey, there's a shortage in the markets, and you know, you can't get groceries and there's nothing there, but they see us growing the food, they want to be a part of that process, and they start to feel power. So, you know, even as far as like the work, we have things set in place, and we're rolling out some phases where we want to be on site even more now that school has picked back up. But for us to see the children, they just come to us and we try to show them how to deal with life, their everyday needs. So being there and showing them like, hey, you know, we have our Black market, whereas you have Black owned businesses, you have Black people selling everything that you need. So showing them also that we are in an economic revolution, right? We don't believe in capitalism, but it's an economic revolution. So it's okay, you can grow your food. You don't have to go to the markets for this. So we really wanted to invest in a community, invest in ourselves, and our children see that. So they pick up on that and they join us and they enjoy it. I think that especially the children in North Philly, they get to see something that not many children get to see, that are in neighborhoods that are just filled with poverty. And they, a lot of them take advantage of that. And they feel important because they are important, and we let them know. So they were standing in line, giving out produce. They were giving out masks. they are a part of, they're part of the program. They are a part of the process. So for us, it was very different. We wanted to, in a safe way, right, have gloves, have masks and everything, practice some of the social distancing. And it's a little easier for us because we are in a park.
Okay.
So, you know, it was a safe space for them to continue to go where they didn't have to feel fearful all of the time. They didn't have to feel that isolation. A lot of the children, excuse me, we think it's just adults. The children were panicking. They get anxiety. They feel isolated. So for us, we had to step up in a better role and say, hey, you're not alone. And this is how we can still have that contact, that communication. So,
you know, and I'm going to pass things over to Brother Richard because I know he wanted to introduce some of the first things that we're going to deal with. But, you know, listening to you, Sister Mania, and Professor Jones's response, it becomes more obvious to me, and especially after the statement that Professor Jones made about us being a colonized people, which I 100% agree with, that it's necessary that we cultivate leadership for our people. Whether you're doing it on the scale that you just mentioned, Sister Lavinia, or we do it on a larger scale, we have to cultivate leadership for our people, because if we see that our people are deficient in leadership or depending on Europeans to lead them, then we have to step up. Because if you flip the script and look at the other side, Europeans are developing leadership for our people. They're developing leadership that wants to keep our people assimilated, keep our people docile, keep our people accepting to whatever comes down the pipe. They are developing leadership, and we see it. We see it all the time in front of us, where Europeans keep constantly developing leadership for black people. So we just can't, we have to do something about that, and that's just my personal opinion. But Brother Richard, jump in here, because I know you want to kind of introduce something that was on your heart.
Yeah, and I'm glad that Brother Jones brought up about being a colonized people, because I want to frame us all as either are from Philadelphia or were raised in Philadelphia to some degree. And in this political moment, you know, I don't want to look at those as who are programmed, but those of us who are who recognize we're creating a new world, right? That's why we're engaged in the activity that we're engaged in. So what I wanted to ask first, but to be clear of this moment, is about the opposition. And so what I wanted to get, you know, just y'all to help me out in looking at Philadelphia, Black Philadelphia, particularly from your vantage point, and the political leadership that's in place. As you're doing your work or making your observation, can you share with us, and I hope that it resonates with those who are of the listeners in other places, but can you share with us what you see as the Black leadership or the leadership, Black and the political leadership, how they are addressing the power relationship or the healing relationship or being about the cultural change? And can I start with you, Sister Lavinia? How do you see Black political leadership assisting from the vantage point of North Philadelphia Peace Park, assisting in doing what y'all are doing?
Oh. Can I say non-existent? Honestly, I would say that the leadership in Philadelphia specifically has been very disappointing. It has literally taken, the community has really done it alone. And even in ways where I would say activists and organizers should step up, as a whole, we have not done that. So it seems like the community, the people have been by themselves. They have not gotten the support that they need. There has not been transparency. There has not been honesty. So for us, we focus on each other. We focus on just being self-reliant and, you know, having that self-determination, because we know that no one is going to save us. We have to save ourselves. We have to do for ourselves. So in this work, it's been us. It's been the community. It has been those who have invested in the park. It has not been the politicians. It hasn't been those involved heavily in politics, I will say. So it's been very disappointing. And for some people, it may be discouraging. But for us, we say, you know, look how far we've come. Like, this is just the beginning. So we encourage people to really just do and, you know, eventually make people work for you. But until they do what they need to do, you have to do what you have to do, which is work with your community and the people and you know, not necessarily focus on them.
And Brother Oba, I'm going to come to you, but I wanted to ask Brother Carlton Jones, because, you know, one thing that I walked away from the beginning of the Independence Day project is not just the elements that were addressed, but the question of what do we want a liberated space to look like? So, you know, and I think that that's so critical, you know, having a strategic vision. It's so critical for those of us who are liberating ourselves. So as you go around and I hear your commentary often, how do you see these political representatives or other actually recognizing that they're about creating a answering that question that you raised, you know, of what a liberated space looked like, which would be inspiring to the rest of us if they were doing it. But how do you see them? They're doing it, or their negligence of not doing it? How do you see that?
I see it as criminal. They're committing crimes against, you know, their own community.
Okay.
I see the politicians as enemies of the state in regards to, if we're talking about a state building black power, of black nation building. They're enemies to us because they're the first gatekeepers. They're the ones who are politicking and working in collusion with the colonizing elements. You know, here in Philadelphia, you have politicians who are puppeteers of organizations like Philadelphia 3.0 and this, that, and the other, which, you know, I'll call names. I don't have any allegiances or ties to anything, and I'm not controlled, and you don't have to worry about me apologizing for this later. You know, these particular politicians are this next tier generation of politicians who banked off of the social issues, the social causes to get elected. But in their form of liberalism, excuse me, is based in, you know, diversity that does not include improving conditions for black people. In fact, they themselves become the shield to defend or protect, you know, the white supremacists behind the scenes.
Exactly.
You know, so they become the let's make an analogy about football. If the running back or the quarterback is the star, they become the lead blockers to make sure that they never take the hit for anything, for any of the damage. Now, you know who throws the touchdown? The quarterback throws the touchdown. But if the blocking is doing their job, the quarterback never gets hit. See, we're trying to hit the quarterback. So they're blocking for the quarterback.
So they're the offensive line, huh?
Offensive line, they're the run blocking tight end.
Okay.
They're whatever you want to call, but they run the interference in between what, you know, we need, and they become the stumbling block, which is, you know, devastating, because when you look at Philadelphia, Philadelphia has been a black run city for the last 30 to 40 years. Forget who the mayor has been, city council or the mayorship in some way, shape, or form. There's always been control, you know, and in these particular districts by black people. And you look at the condition of Philadelphia for black people, and black people are suffering tremendously. And then when we have people creating spaces for black people, we start to see the partnerships that they form to get their political alliances in order. And they're utilizing those things right now as they, you know, manipulate things behind the scenes
and become a destructive force to anything we try to build in regards to Black liberation for or creating liberated spaces for Black people.
And you know, now, Brother Obi, the reason I wanted to, because in what you do, as I see it, you know, y'all are engaged in the cultural aspect, and for this, you know, and it seems that we have to, I'm specifically looking at those of us who are looking at creating liberated spaces and are doing the work of creating liberated spaces, that we have to have a certain cultural matrix to do that. And so what up, and I know you're not in Philadelphia now, but growing up in Philadelphia and having a close tie to it, I'm wondering in the assistance of developing a strong cultural matrix that will protect us from these or at least give us the strength to break through that line, right? As Brother Jones brought up, what is it that you see we have to emphasize in Philadelphia, Black Philadelphia, amongst those of us who are creating this liberated space as it relates to culture, as it relates to the values, the behavior that we have to exhibit in order to overcome this opposition? And I am going somewhere with this and asking us to start off, but what do you see that we have to do in relationship to culture to do that, strengthen ourselves?
You know, I've been, you know, Philadelphia is my home. It's been near and dear to me now for 49 years. I've seen a lot of things happen in Philadelphia. And to answer that question, it's gonna really take a very interesting answer. I think we already had that. I think we had that back in 1976, 1977 with the establishment of Odunde.
Yes.
But I think that Odunde was very, very clear when it started on what it wanted to be, on what it wanted to achieve and accomplish. Somewhere along the line, as the years went on, the message got blurred and skewed and confused. And so the city didn't look at, exactly, so the city did not look at Odunde as a cultural matrix or a way of introducing culture to the greater African American community in the city as something that was something that they could stand behind. The only way they could stand behind Odunde is that Odunde would move itself into position to start financially being supported by, sponsored by the city of Philadelphia, and getting in bed with the city, getting in bed with corporate, with large corporations that had money, because they believed that that was the only way that it could survive and took its eye off of the cultural significance of what it could do for the city of Philadelphia, and what politicians could somehow, some way say, hey, you know, this is good for the community. This is something that we need to support, because Odunde is about something, and it totally shifted from that. So now what you have now when it comes to Odunde is a, an entity that is dressed up like it's cultural, but at its core, it's really all about what money they can get from putting it on every year and what the city of Philadelphia gets from having tourism, hotels, flights from all over the country, all over the world, restaurants, and the money that it can generate from the city of Philadelphia. Philadelphia already had that. So now let's fast forward to 2020. We must begin to be in a process to continue to keep the type of events and things of that nature that emphasize culture as grassroots and not go out there for the money. You know what I'm saying? That's what I think, you know, what we do with African Independence Day, what we pride ourselves in doing. That's what Mama Okosua Ali Sabri pr-
prided herself on doing for over 25 years, along with Michelle Goodwin and the Kawumba Family Collective with the last conference. You cannot sell out. You must put culture in the forefront and make these politicians, force them to look at you and say, hey, we got to come to the table a little bit differently with these people, because they're not going for the money. This is not about the money. This is about something else bigger and greater than that. And of course, a lot of them are going to be scared of that, because African Independence Day, events like the last conference, speak against everything that the politicians and things of that nature stand for. But at the same time, they're going to have a little bit more respect, because they know and understand that in events like African Independence Day, the last conference, you can name them, and there are a few around the city of Philadelphia, the Ngoma Celebration of the Drum. You can't buy us. We cannot be bought. We don't have a price. It's not about money here. It is about the installation, the development of culture, and building around the culture institutions that support the cultural event or the cultural phenomenon that you've created for the people in your community and of your city. And that's what it's about. And Odunde, like I said, near and dear to me, because my family started it, fumbled the ball a long damn time ago, because it became about the money and not about the cultural principle. And when the politicians saw that, they said, oh, they got a price. They can be bought. We can negotiate with them and strike a deal with them. You know what I mean? Whereas though, yeah, they can introduce it as a cultural event, but in all actuality, it's about money exchanging hands and who gets what at the end of the day.
You know, I really appreciate that honesty and in relationship to, especially because of your close familiarity with the family and those of us who, looked at Odunde as the potential of being more a political organizing cultural vehicle, in its early inception, especially those of us from the area that it started in South Philadelphia, mm-hmm. and those mm-hmm. who are of that culture. Now, the reason why I wanted to bring this up to y'all, I was told that I was informed about it. Elliot, you had told me that you had sent me information about it, mm-hmm. but I didn't know this North Star Convention was going on. It was a cultural, a political event. And it bothered me when I seen the organizers, which are primarily all the black politicians, the new ones, that's council and some in the middle age has been in, when I say middle age, as far as been in politics a while, that are state representatives and some of the non-political entities that maintain the colony, right? So it really bothered me because they're organizing for the next generation. That's the way I see it, right? To maintain their job, as I call it. But what I want to come back to you, Sister Lavinia, and ask, since we're in a political structure, do you see, and I'm trying to incorporate this one thing that I really like that y'all do at Peace Park, building by healing. Is that right? And I think that's like the phenomenon of it. Do you see that we should, those of us who are trying to expand our deliberative space, do you see that we can truly utilize the political machinery that exists in the environments that we're in? Or do we have to stay isolated and build our liberated space and create our own political infrastructure some kind of way, if the question makes sense to you?
Well, I will say that being land-based put us in a position where we can control our own neighborhoods and what we do. Strategically, you still will have to move around for where you are. So you're going to have to deal with some people, but things change. They have to deal with you on your terms. And I think that what sets the parks aside is that we're revolutionaries. I think that makes a big difference. So, you know, when we reference to the Black Panthers and stuff, they made moves from a revolutionary stance. They had a goal in mind, and they understood. And so many, you know, other groups, including, you know, BLA, had to enforce some things. They made their stance according to the goals that they wanted. And I think that we have to get to a point where we realize that this system is working perfectly fine. It was designed to keep us down, specifically Black people at the bottom, and it's not going to help us. So there may be some loopholes where you may, you know, hey, I got a little crumb here, a little crumb there, but ultimately it has to be dismantled. We will not advance under the system. So separation, no matter how small it is, you have to start there. So being land-based, like, I can't stress that enough. Being land-based has literally put us in a different position, and that's why we're building a school now, you know, our peace pavilion. That's why we can dictate when we give out food, how we grow our food, when we are, you know, providing resources for the mental health and everything. We determine that. So there are ways to isolate yourself strategically. And I think that, you know, it's been done in different places down south and everything. And I think that we all have to take it more serious in Philadelphia, and we have to start implementing these strategies and being land-based. I think we need to stop looking to the system for help, because the politicians have shown us over and over again, as my brothers have stated, and thank you for going into detail as you both have, that it's about the money for them. It's not about the people. They don't have empathy and sympathy for us. They've been bought out a long time ago. The only thing they care about is when their coins are going low. So now we have to make a decision to exclude ourselves.
Mm. And, you know, as you go, take us to that punctuated point, and I go to, and brother, and Elliot, and I appreciate you. Let me, you know, just hopefully build correctly on this. Brother Carl, do you, you know, from your vantage point, and again, I was totally, I've seen the evolution of this political, these political entrepreneurs, you know, and over that 50, 60 years. And I've asked the question, what has Black Philadelphia benefit from that in all areas of social indicators? And one, I couldn't get no answer, you know, from people I was familiar with, but that aside. But what I wanted because of the perspective I see you come from, and looking at these, because there's now young council persons and young state representatives that are Black within the Black community. Do you see that? How do you see that we have to engage them to be able to maintain the liberated space we have and be able to expand on it? Or do we have to engage them at all? Can we create a separate, be separate and not have to engage them at all, based off of them, in my opinion, being the opposition?
Well, we have to treat them like everybody else treats them. You know, Dr. Claude Anderson said, treasure politicians, you buy politicians, you own politicians, you leverage politicians. So, you know, we have a handling politics, and anybody in fact that has any stature, we like to celebrate people. But, you know, when somebody is a public official, then that means that they have a duty to do what's best in the best interest of the public. And typically what happens is they do what's in the best interest of special interest. So we have to become special interest, and we have to around those particular places where we cause disruption, where we may cause them some bad publicity. So until we get to the point where they have to respect the power we bring to the table. And as we build the power, you know, and bring that power to the table, what I mean by build the power, you know, continuity, building up our economics around our cultural endeavors, as Brother Obama spoke on earlier, sorry, about 5 seconds. But in terms of building up in that endeavor, we basically hold them accountable. You know, so in other words, I don't care who gets elected. You know, no other community really cares about who gets elected. It's all public theater. But when you get elected, this is the accountability. This is what you owe my community. Here's the policies we have set aside. Our political PAC is have a certain amount of money. Do you want to get reelected? Okay, we have money for you set aside. Pass these policies that we put together, that we designed, you know, that's going to benefit our community, our nation. And that's how we have to address them. We don't have friends. And Malcolm said it best. And Dr. John Henry Clark said it best. As black people, we don't have friends anywhere in the world. And even other black faces that are representations of our, they're not friends either. They have become bought and paid puppeteers, a puppet of the puppeteers that you know, control our society. So we then have to make them accountable. Just like the Asian community does not let anything happen in the Chinatown district or anything in the Spring Garden district without their say-so. Why? Because they themselves manage the power of control in that district. You know, you can't really do much in South Philadelphia, well, at least you couldn't for a long time, because the Italians and the mafia would make sure that certain things were addressed and taken care of. There are certain areas in the city. You can't go to Northeast Philadelphia right now and get anything done without getting past the Russian lobby and all those different things that happen there. You know, so this is what I'm saying. They organize behind the scenes. They don't go out marching. They don't go out protesting. They put their economic engine behind their cultural needs, and then they bring it to the office to the politicians. The politicians, actually, you know what? The politicians seek them out. They recognize them as the community leaders. And then they bend to their will. And that's how we have to operate in this particular system, you know, in terms of engaging our black politicians and so forth. And I don't care what color they are, we still can leverage them if we recognize our power and stop stepping to the table with bankers. So I respect what the Peace Park does, because the Peace Park just rolls in. The Peace Park just bowls in and takes it and then make you come to the table, and which has happened recently, by the way, you know, in West Philadelphia. So, you know, and now people have to deal with the Peace Park. Why? Because the Peace Park claimed something and did it in a way where it said, listen, we represent the power here. If you're going to get anything done here, you have to address the power, because we just took this. You know what I'm saying? And that's how we got to be, you know. Listen, politics is nothing more than a pretty way to say being gangsters. And we have to have enough heart to be gangsters in this particular spectrum.
And Ellie, I'll close with Brother Obi on this round, you know, in the sense of the, you know, and again, I apologize, but I have compartmentalized my questions to each of you. In what I see, the strength and the wisdom and the knowledge that you bring from the perspective and experience you have. So what I wanted to know, Brother Obi, I'm convinced that the political entrepreneurs, the black political entrepreneurs, are the opposition. I'm convinced of that. I'm also convinced that, as Brother Carl said, that we are in a colonized space. Some of us may not be colonized people, but we're in a political, economic colonized space. And so what I wanted to see your reflection on is the part of those of us who you mentioned earlier about the dropping of the ball of the cultural matrix in order to truly maintain that the organizing mechanism. I believe the culture is the glue that binds us together. Do you see in the generation that's past some and the generation that's present that there is a utilization of the cultural amongst us who are looking for liberated space like Peace Park? And I would like to come back to with Brother Carl You was talking about what happened in West Philly, because I think that's a good example, and West Philadelphia Peace Park. But do you see that we are utilizing the cultural space and have learned the lesson of what you had described earlier? Because I think that that's so important to be able to be clear of what it is that we have to do so that same thing doesn't happen again. Do you see that as occurring, that we are learning the lesson and strengthening the glue around that cultural matrix?
Some of us are, not enough of us, but that's okay, because it's not supposed to be everybody, you know. Only a few who really understand what it is that we need to do and understand the importance of culture, that culture is the building block to any civilization, which encompasses family, which encompasses community, which encompasses tribe, which encompasses nation. Very few of us understand this concept, and very few people that I know personally who are not just talking about it and theorizing the idea of us creating that free space, but are actually implementing it and putting it into motion. I know you all know about, and I'm doing a lot of research on the 19 families that got together down in Georgia that have purchased land and have bought in other individuals who have invested in this this project to create a black town in the likes of Rosewood and the likes of Tulsa. You know, it's not a large operation. It's small. 19 families. A lot of people say, "Oh, that's a lot of families." No, that's actually not. It's a small thing that is going on, that they've incorporated other families and other people outside of the main core family that has invested in this land and are going to build on this land. But for the most part, it's still small. It's a concept that many of our people cannot see, and that a lot of our people are not ready for, because as Brother Carl said beautifully earlier, we are still a nerd to the system. We still look at America and the European white man and European white woman as our surrogate mother and father, and we still want to be fed, breastfed by America. And we're not there yet. Some of us are. The people you have on this call, myself, Brother Carl, Sister Lavinia, we are, but we're a small minority, a small group of Africans amongst our people that are there with it. The larger part of our people have not come around to that, and I don't know when, and I don't know if or when they will ever come around to it, but it has to be done, because as Sister Lavinia said beautifully, this system was not constructed in its prime directives to help assist, to help support, to give aid to African people who were born and raised in America. It was not designed with us in mind. So we know and understand that the only alternative that we have is to truly go about the idea of doing things for ourselves and building building a free, independent state for ourselves as African people. But I'm just being very, very blunt and very, very honest. A lot of our people have not come around to that idea yet, and I don't know if or when that'll happen.
Thanks, Elliot, for letting me, you know, as we continue on with this discussion. And I really appreciate everybody's response.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to expand the discussion to talk about more of what's going on nationally. And plus, I want to ask a question when we come back from break about the obligation that we have to encourage our people. And I'm talking about conscious individuals, whoever they are. The obligations that we have to encourage our people to fight our enemies that don't look like us and our enemies that look like us. I think that's important to me. Let's take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll expand the discussion. You can get involved, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. In conversation tonight with three activists, filmmaker Professor Carl Tone, and educator and filmmaker Professor Carl Tone Jones, activist and organizer Brother Oba Olainka, and sister activist Lavinia Davis. And again, you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. Abibitumi, Black Power, Abibitumi. The only word you need to know to join your global Kometsu Black family, to join your interconnected Kometsu Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
Know that this problem needs to be solved, and we can't keep relegating it to generation after generation because a few of us got a little money, a few of us got positions, a few of us have wealth, while the masses of our people are going steadily down. No one man can rise above the condition of his people. See, brother said responsibility. Is it that we should let them take responsibility to do for us, or should we pool the knowledge that's at the table, the power that's in our community, the wealth that's in our community to change the harsh reality of black life in America? We have to do the job of fulfilling the black agenda. Thank you.
We have a message to the black man, because the black man today is a man who has been made now almost into a laughing stock. Nobody takes the black man serious. We are just used to be somebody's tool. We are the sportsmen. We're the singers and the dancers. And we're also labeled as the pimps and the criminals, and the drug dealers, and the killers, and the vagabonds of society. We're the bogeymen of British society and other Western systems. And we want to dispel that lie and destroy those myths and put the black man back on the map where we belong. Who is the black man? The black man is the original man. If it wasn't for the black man, no other men could be on this planet. We are the fathers of humanity. We gave birth to all of you.
We are the watchmen on the wall. You are too. You watch with a political eye. We watch from a spiritual eye. But we're supposed to be the watchmen for the people that vote for us. The sad thing is, the people vote, but they don't give you the money to run your campaigns. So here come big business.
How are you? How are you, Judge? How are you, Alderman? How are you, Congressman? How are you? How are you, Reverend? Well, what can I do for you today, Reverend?
You can't do nothing for me. See, that's what we got to be careful of. We got to be careful of who we bow down to. But see, when you get in your congregation and you talk this Jesus, this powerful Jesus that's sitting at the right hand of the Father with all power in his hand, then you go with your hat in your hand to the governor, to the mayor, to the president, begging for some crumbs. You have sold your God cheap. And you make the white man downtown disrespect all of us.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:17 here in the city of Philadelphia, and we're joined in conversation by three grassroots activists educator and filmmaker, Professor Carl Tone Jones, activist and organizer, Brother Oba Olayinka, and sister activist, Lavinia Davis. And you can get involved in the conversation also by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We do have some calls on the line. But I want to throw this out there because I mentioned it before the break. And in that collage of clips, you heard Minister Farrakhan mention some things about what's going on in our community politically. And this is to the panel, because I want to give a couple of examples so we can see. And I know that all of you know what we're up against. But before we went to break, I mentioned about the obligation that we have to encourage our people to fight enemies that look like us and the ones that don't look like us. Let me read a couple paragraphs from this article that just came out a couple of days ago, published report. Because several of these major cities have something in common. New York, because we had Charles Barron on about 3 weeks ago. Chicago, Philadelphia, Baltimore. Several of these cities has two things in common. The majority of their political offices is occupied by black folks, and they're Democrat. The leadership of these cities are Democrat. Now, let me read just a couple of paragraphs from this article. Hundreds of affordable housing units in Chicago's South Side sold at auction. In a move that some fear could contribute to the slow march of gentrification throughout the city, hundreds of affordable housing units in Chicago's South Side were sold at auction on Friday to two for-profit investment firms. The winning bids were Chicago-based Longwood Development and fund manager Atlas Management. An attorney for the sellers confirms the group bid. Hold on 1 second. All right, I'm sorry. The group bid about $35,000 per apartment and $18 million total, according to the Hillco Real Estate, which managed the private court-appointed auction. The portfolio of 45 buildings housing over 535 apartments included properties in Bronzeville, Washington Park, Inglewood, Woodlawn, Chatham, and South Shore. The properties were frequently described as distressed. The portfolio included six flats with grand brick balconies, stately cornered buildings, stone properties overlooking the boulevard of the major South Side arteries, and classic 1920 courtyard apartments, all of which were a part of a massive real estate portfolio put together by a dubious nonprofit, the Better Housing Foundation, that had promised tenants affordable housing and help, but instead ran the buildings into the ground and ended up in building court and bankruptcy. The nonprofit brought dozens of properties with tens of millions of low-interest loans from the Illinois Finance Authority, a sum far greater than what the properties yielded in Friday's auctions. Now, put that article to the side. Another article came out a couple of days ago that Chase Manhattan Bank, Wells Fargo, and several other banking institutions was involved in the scheme to divert the water supply in Flint, Michigan, that poisoned our people that populated Flint. And caused Legionella, Legionnaire's disease, and other illnesses to our people. To me, that's tantamount to the Tuskegee experiment. Black elected officials in Flint colluded with enemies, open enemies, historic enemies of our people. Here in Philadelphia, I'll give you two examples. During this pandemic, businesses were closed. Black businesses is already at a low point in this city anyway. But black businesses in particular was hit hard. most black businesses in this city or nationally was historically barber and beauty salons that were closed for months. Now, you had other businesses that was operating all during this pandemic. Asian businesses with that slop they serve in the community and that poison that they serve, that fortified liquor, was still open, a lot of them. And all these poppy stores with people of another nationality was open the whole pandemic. Me personally, I called the city several times to complain about these Asian businesses that was open. And the response to me was, they're allowed to be open. Now, who allowed them to be open? In the block where I have my business, it's two black businesses. And I was there by myself for a number of years. But a brother across the street bought a building and made it a restaurant. He came over to me 2 years ago and said that it was a zoning meeting at the church down the street, and he wanted me to attend. He asked me to give his support because he wanted to build a black-owned restaurant across the street from me. I told him he got my 100% support. We need more black businesses. But since then, you've had six other businesses that have opened up in the community. Two Latino stores, two Asian stores, and an Asian bought the place right next to me and is refurbishing the place now. I went over there 2 days ago and asked him, all this banging and all. I'm saying, what are you doing over there? Oh, what? I said, what type of business are you putting here? I'm not sure. I said, what do you mean you're not sure? I said, where's the zoning notices that you're supposed to have displayed? I'll get them. So immediately I called the city. They said, he has zoning notices. I said, well, what is he supposed to put there? When is the zoning meeting scheduled? Oh, I don't know. You got to get a hold of your local politician. That's the problem, brothers and sisters. And I know what's going on in other cities. These black elected officials make sure these other people don't have to do all these things that we have to do. These people open up businesses in your community and they just open up. They're not supposed to do that. They're supposed to have rules that they follow. And the black elected officials do have control of these communities to a certain extent. They control what businesses go in there. They control the money and tax base to a certain extent. They don't have to send all that money downtown. It could be filtered to our community organizations or to some of the ideas like Professor Carl Tone Jones had, the black captains. Money could be diverted to some, because the people in these communities pay taxes, just like the white people in these other neighborhoods. These people don't stand up for the community. A lot of them come from the community, and they give all the secrets, so-called secrets, downtown to white folks. Oh, you don't have to disrespect them people. They ain't going to do nothing but blow smoke. Yeah, we don't have to worry about that. We can do what we want to do. They are enemies of the community, and we have an obligation to fight them and get them out from in front of our people. They are a danger to our people. They don't do our people any good. And we can't complain about them because they're doing serious harm. They're doing serious harm. So I just want y'all opinion on this, because these things are going on all the time. And especially if you have a business in the community, you see what they're doing. You see that these other businesses don't have to follow these laws because the black elected officials allow them to. They can control. Businesses can't open up. And I'm glad you gave that example, Professor Jones. These businesses can't open up in communities without going to community organizations first. And now, wait a minute, without going to the elected official first and then the community organization second. I can't go in these other neighborhoods and open up any business, whether a barbershop or anything else. They ain't going to allow it. When I go to the zoning meeting, they're going to say thumbs down. But these people open up businesses in our community and they don't even have a zoning meeting. Of course, the black elected officials don't require them to. Now, that brother that opened up a place across from me, he had to have one. These other places, they don't have to have no zoning meeting. They opened all during the pandemic, taking your dollars. We just can't allow these people. We can't allow these people to be in control of the economy of our communities. these black folks, that the politicians, are enemies to the community. Some of them might be nice people. Some of them might be relatives of ours. But it doesn't matter. I'm looking at that thing Richard sent me, this North Star, and they got the nerve to name it North Star Convention. You see all these names here, Kenyatta Johnson, Jordan Harris, Malcolm Kenyatta, Isaiah Thomas, Joanna McClinton, all of these charlatan Uncle Toms. Come on, man. We can't allow these people to be in control of our communities. We just can't. We can't. I'm sorry to go on that rant, brothers and sisters, but I want your opinion before we go to a couple of these calls.
You want them in any particular order, good brother?
Yeah, well, ladies first. Ladies first.
Oh, I try to, because I feel rage so much when I go into what's actually happening in our city and globally when it comes to those who act like they're coming in good faith and they come looking like us. But I get angry because the whole world is anti-black.
Mm-hmm.
And we see it even amongst our own people that do not have love for others. And then I say, you know what? How can you love me if you don't love you? So I know when I do my work, I say, okay, I'm doing it because in order for me to love me, I have to love you because you are a reflection of me. But then when you look at the others and even the names that you listed, it's disgusting.
It is.
Because there is no love for black people. There's so many excuses, right? There's so much empathy for everybody else. Like, we could see the children starving here in Philadelphia, being murdered, being oppressed, and people will say, oh my goodness, look across the world. Did you not see the Palestinian or this and that? And the children are suffering. And I'm thinking, like, did you, and I'm from South Philly, did you not see this war that's happening? You don't know how many children just got murdered this week? You don't care about that? You're not going to stand up for that? So I'm reminded constantly of the disdain that people have for our people. So once again, it says, okay, do you sit and you be angry, or what do you do? And that is why we have to build our systems for us, with people that believe like us. And we have to cut out anyone who is detrimental to what we're trying to build, who is detrimental to black people. So once we see people expose themselves, you can't come around saying that you're for us, because we know you're not. So why would we keep accepting you and justifying what you do? And another thing is, I believe in sanctions. I tell people that all the time. The one thing we tend to forget is that we had a black mafia and other mafias. And there were certain things, there were certain codes that had to be kept within the black community. And if we see people building, you may not be able, or you may think you can't get them out right away. But while they're there, they need to pay. So there's no way that you should be in our community and cursing out our children and putting out the glass windows, putting all these bars up, and then not even sponsoring anything, not donating anything, not, you know, opening up the recreational centers and saying, okay, twice a month at the very least, you are going to sponsor some activity for the community. You are going to service the people here. And guess what? We have files on you. So all of your violations, everything that came, we will shut you down. And I think that we have to become more aggressive,
okay,
with different groups that say, hey, no, we like you. We're with you. No, we have to hold you to high standards. And we have to make you prove through your actions, not trusting people. I'm not saying trust people. But have people, make sure they have a mutual respect. That is something we must demand. That is something we must see. But we also must cut down who we allow to gain access to us. Because everybody benefits off of black people but black people. And the ones that do benefit that are black, they are enemies to black people. So we must be very clear, and we must understand with these political agendas, because a lot of people, they don't love black people. They're going into office just so they can be something that they're not, just so they can get some perks, not realizing that once they get tired of you, we see the scandals that happen in the papers, right? They will throw you away. So you can be buddies with them, but next thing you know, they're hitting you with charges and you're getting in trouble for embezzlement and everything else. So I think that we must come together. We must start with sanctions until we shut these businesses down. We must know who our enemies are. And I say that very clearly, who our enemies are. And you've listed a couple of them. We have to be clear and we have to move forward. And we have to, as Brother Carl Tone said, we have to take things and then make people come to our table. We don't have to go to their table. That's where we are confused. We think we have to keep going to others. No, make them come to your table. Make them ask for our permission. And 90% of the time, we need to deny them anything that they're asking. So that's, you know, I don't want to go on and on, but that's my position.
Brothers, Brother Omar, Professor Caldwell, jump in.
I will say this. And I'm a student of history, and I have to go back and talk about the times in which the Panthers, the original Black Panther Party for Self Defense, under the leadership of Chairman Bobby Seale and Dr. U.E.P. Newton, with the brothers and sisters from the various different chapters across the country were doing. And there were businesses that were owned by people who were non-Black people, non-African in our community. They would go in and they would say, in order for your business to stay open, you must give a certain percentage of your earnings from our people who support your business back to the community. If not, we shut you down. And that was very, very effective, because a lot of white folks, a lot of these, you know, white folks thought that their, you know, brothers was robbing them. And basically we were playing Robin Hood. We were stealing from the rich, the people were making the money off of our people, hand over fist, who were supporting their stores, and we were giving it back to the poor. We were taking that same money and dumping it back into the breakfast program, into the sickle cell program, into the various different programs that the Panthers were creating to help to nourish our community, helping in the process of improving the health of our people in our community, so forth and so on. We must go back to doing that. You know, politicians are in bed with many of these foreign businesses that are in our community. They're not going to close them down. They're not. But we got to get something out of it. And that means we got to go back to strong arm these damn communities. If you're going to use that term, strong arm, I don't care. We got to go back to old school tactics in order to make these businesses know that you're not going to come up in here, set up shop, sell death in the form of your liquor, sell death in the form of your chicken wings and things that clog up your arteries and increase the level of bad health and nutrition in our community and not pay a price for it. We got to be that serious about what it is we want for these businesses to know when they come and set up shop in a Black community. And I know that a lot of them will begin to be a little bit more reluctant of setting up shop in our community and just thinking as though they're just going to come walking up in there and making money hand over fist on our people and they don't have to pay a price. No, we must make everyone who comes into our communities and neighborhoods pay a price. If not, we shut your ass down. Use my language, but we shut you down. And I'm very, very serious about that. Since the politicians are in bed with a lot of these businesses, and they get political favors and endorsements from these businesses, so forth and so on. Small, big, whatever. But these are the same businesses that have established shop in our community for years and didn't have to pay the price for the piper. Now we're saying, as the piper, it's time to pay up. And that's how I feel about it.
Okay.
Well, I hear it, and I got you. I think I'm going to take it from a different perspective. Not that I disagree with what's been said. I think that's needed. You know, the neighborhood policing, the neighborhood enforcement, you know, community enforcement is needed. But I think it also, we need to, you know, hold our own people accountable for how this is happening. You know, because there are bourgeois class issues going on in the black community, which profit off of these particular relationships.
Yes.
They're the ones we need to address, because they're the gatekeepers. I mean, everything else we're doing, basically, we're handling the stems, we're handling the leaves and the branches, but the root of the problem is the sellout Negroes that's allowing it to take place.
Yes.
You know, the sellout Negroes, the vanguard that's protecting these politicians, the vanguard, like the political action groups. They have one here in Philadelphia called the Different Kind of Democrat. They're not the only one, by the way. But then you also have all these different political legacies in the city, you know, for which, you know, they're protected. They're sort of a bourgeois class that makes sure that this is the next group of candidates that are going in to do this. And they're the ones that actually are fostering these relationships. They're the local Van Joneses of the world who are creating these unevenly yoked relationships within the community. And therefore, they're the ones that smile at every photo op and so forth. They're the ones we need to address with this. They're the ones we need to hold accountable, because the bourgeoisie of the black community, the so-called talented temp, they're the ones who create these particular dynamics where the bloodsuckers get to come in, the bloodsuckers get to bypass all the rules. Meanwhile, if you and I want to open up and operate a business, we got to take tax liens, this, that, and the other. They have all sorts of things in place that they never have to endure.
Yes.
You know, so that's what we have to start attacking, as well as, you know, because you can't have the street justice because we don't have the organization to deal with the law enforcement component that will be released upon us. You know, we don't have in place right now, we don't have the particular people or groups and allies aligned, and we haven't created the type of we haven't put forth the type of economic sanctions and controls that we need to hold these people accountable. So all those different things need to come lined up, but first and foremost, we need to identify the bourgeois. We need to put sanctions on their businesses, sanctions on their connections. You know, hey, listen, I'm not even above, you know, I'm playing in the muddy end of the field, if anybody really can understand what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a reason as to why J. Edgar Hoover didn't acknowledge the mafia until the 1960s and 70s. You know what I'm saying? There was a reason, because they had blackmail on him. Well, we know these politicians we deal with ain't clean. Why don't he set some investigations up on how they act and operate and have a conversation with them about how certain things need to go? And I know we probably shouldn't be saying this on the air, but hey, you know, I'm just throwing it out there in regards, since we already put out there that we would, you know, basically smack up some kneecaps and whatnot and twist a few ankles. So the way we would have to go about it is, like I said before, when we start talking about politics, politics is gangsters. The whole system of politics is gangsterism, is rooted in gangsterism. This country was formed by gangsters. The neighborhood gangs became organized crime. The organized crime created the party politics, the handshakes, the vanilla envelopes that are passed back and forth. They created those ways. So if we're going to work within this system in terms of gathering anything, then we have to be gangster like they're gangster. And, you know, but we also have to do all the things they have in place, because they have shields and safety nets for their gangsterism. And so we have to form those shields and safety nets in terms of, you know, the way we operate, the organization that we put together, and, you know, the discretion we're going to have to maintain in order to get that done.
I said. I agree. I agree with all. But Brother Jones, I think that you're really, you know, hitting on the point of where we have to, where what we have to have in place. And it's this we that we have to be clear of. And that's what I wanted to make sure that we understand, because this we is that very small minority of us. We have to have that in place. And that's why it's so important to hear, even amongst you who are here now, the networking and relationships that are being fostered between you, between us, because in the end, to put those infrastructures in place in order, if you really want to go, and I agree with you, not only gangster, this is war, because them guys don't play. They don't play. And if we think they playing, it's, you know, and these guys that they, you know, so I agree wholeheartedly. It's just that we have to understand that we're not dissembled pieces, that we are a minority of a unified piece with the intent of a just society that we are looking at to govern in the spaces that we're in, that we are the governing body. And therefore we're, you know, Elliot, that goes to the question of our responsibility, because if that, then we're not only, we're competing and in this environment to govern the masses of Black people in the best interest of Black people, and from a health perspective, as Sister Lavinia said.
Let's take a few of these calls. Let's go to 404. 404, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, man. Peace and blessings, family. Hey, Elliot, good show, man. Good show. Okay, you touched on so many things, man, but I'm surprised Chicago. I listen to Chicago radio. I ain't heard none of the Negroes say nothing about that tent. But see, Elliot, man, Richard, see, I found out last week, okay, we stuck on the damn, between the damn, these two poles, a Democrat and a Republican, man. It's like both of them two ass cheeks, man. Okay, I hate that we right in the middle of it. I hate to make it blunt like that. But I found out last week, man, a platform. See, we used to hear from the damn Green Party, Libertarian Party, and these debates, right? So, Richard, y'all go to the platform for the Green Party. They got two pages about reparations, man. Okay, and I was shocked, man, with all this so-called Black media every damn where. I ain't heard nothing about no Green Party, man. And see, like, on 2016, I wrote in Cynthia McKinney, man. That's what I do. I wrote in Cynthia McKinney, man. And I don't like none of these damn crackers, man. Okay, and as far as this Trump thing with them taxes, man, she's smart. So we the damn fool. Why would I pay somebody to bust me upside the head? We're paying taxes. That's the way I look at it, man. Damn America, man. Okay, and all y'all right, man. I love y'all, man. I do all y'all right, man, on what y'all talking about, man. It's time for us to just go ahead and take a stand. Yeah. Like tomorrow, because it's supposed to be Columbus Day. How many niggas going to be celebrating Columbus Day, man?
Leave us alone.
Hey, look here on Columbus Day. Did y'all know it was some Black navigators or Moors and some Black people navigating and bringing that devil over here, man?
Well, they didn't know where they were going. Yeah. Hello?
And then when he got over here, he got niggas that showing the what? Oh, yeah, here we go, Columbus. Showing Lewis and Clark, Columbus, what we got over here, man. Okay, so y'all right, man. We basically in our own downfall, man. That's the point I'm trying to make, man. But like I say, man, y'all check out the Green Party platform, man. Okay? I don't want to take up too much time. Y'all got a good show. I ain't going to squeeze the mic no more. I let somebody else talk, man. I love y'all.
Thank you for your call. Let's go to 267. 267, are you there? 267-296. Okay, let's put them back on hold. Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes, Brother Eddie, I'm Brother Richard, Brother Marcus.
How are you, sir?
Good evening. I'm doing great, good brothers. You know, one participant we neglected to point out, you know, was the black consumer. See, the black consumer, you know, is one of the biggest enemies, because the black consumer keep taking that dollar to that other person, to that alien in the community. But maybe we need to take that picket sign and knock that black consumer in the head, you see? Because they are the ones who continue to take the money to these people. In every other community, the Chinese community, the Chinese woman take that money to a Chinese man. In the Jewish community, well, we know everything is kosher with them. You know, we in each ethnic community, and New York is a typical example of that. New York City, because it's a segregated city, although they say it's a melting pot, but it's very segregated. You know, so we got to look at the you know, now there was a brother by the name of Carlos Cooks. A lot of people don't recognize Carlos Cooks, because Carlos Cooks, I guess because he was an atheist, I guess a lot of people say, no, we don't want this guy here, his ideology. However, Carlos Cooks had a thing he had created called the Lead Pipe Brigade. And the purpose of the Lead Pipe Brigade was to keep that black consumer in line. So they had the first tier was the picketers. They would be in front of the store picketing, don't buy from the store, blah, 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 you know, in front of the store. Then you would have the surveillance people. The purpose of the surveillance people is so that consumer that walk past you and tell you, to hell with you, nigga, they tell you, to go spend my money, I want to spend my money. They would capture that person, take a picture or whatever, and pass that on to the Lead Pipe Brigade, who would capture these people and meet them somewhere where they go in war with the merchandise, break it up, knock them in the head, and tell them, hey, buy black. And that would spread in the black community. You know, it's kind of comical, but it makes sense, you see, because it's going to take some degree of strong arm, as the brother was saying, to correct the you know, but again, I say this place is so, it is so, we are being attacked on so many fronts. You know, it's you get hit here, you get hit here, you know. So, I mean, it's like a pack of, you know, you're surrounded by a pack of hyenas. And that's the situation we're in, you know. But the brother was right, you know. But we got to just look at the black consumer too, you know, that is one of the traitors too, that spending that money out of the community. Amy, good brother, that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your contribution.
All right, good brother. Thank you.
Peace. Let's go to 919 in South North Carolina. Hey, go ahead.
Before we go to the next call, can I just address something Brother Richard said? Because he said something that was very important.
Yes.
And, you know, he said to really acknowledge the fact that we're at war. And I really, you know, that's not language to speak and acknowledge that. But I find that when we start telling our people that we're at war, our people become disenfranchised with anything else, or disassociated with anything else we try to say to them in regards to that. Because if we recognize and saw this from a position of being at a standpoint from being at war, then this whole conversation changes. You know what I'm saying? The way we address things, the way we look at things, we wouldn't be talking about people sitting across the table. We'd be talking about enemy combatants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'd be talking about things like, you know, taking what's ours, this and the other. And that some of that's been discussed tonight. I'm not going to say it hasn't been discussed tonight. But what I'm saying is the whole context would have been a little different. But I agree totally with Brother Richard when he says this is a war. But only from the perspective that we are being warred on. We are not responding like the people at war. So that's why I just wanted to add that.
Yes, sir.
I mean, if I could just say real quick, Brother Carl, you hit the nail on the head. We're not at war. We're being warred upon. And as you and I both know, that is something that Mama Marimba Ani, author of the book Urugu, and Let the Circle Be Unbroken, speak so eloquently about. Until we as a people, until we as black people and so-called African-Americans, Africans born here in America, born and raised here in America, in particular, develop a strategy and implement that strategy to fight back, then we are being warred upon, meaning that they're taking the war to us and we're not fighting back, which means, in essence, we're losing until we fight back. And Brother Carl, you know, said it so eloquently. We are being warred upon. We are not at war. We're not in war. We're being warred upon.
And Elliot, as you you know, take the next caller afterwards, you know, I wanted to on this being at war and trying to. You know, I'm a coward, right? So sometimes I use the soft language, right? But I think it's so important that we really deal with that. And after you take the next calls, I like to, because I like, and being at war, the example of Peace Park as my observation, and even in our discussion, we hear some expanses of it, of how the, you know, how we can perceive warfare from our vantage point, because a lot of times people see warfare as guns and bombs, but 75% of a military structure is more support than it is actually the actual combat field officers. So, but I think that the development of that, an example in Peace Park, I like to, you know, just to get some confirmation from all of us, could we see it as that? But I apologize for holding up with the callers from input.
No, well, go ahead, ask Courtney. We can we got time. We got we can go back. Go ahead. You know, whatever. Yeah,
I would need your help, Sister Lavina, because I, in this example. When you take about taking space, taking land, and it's not just about taking the land, right, but cultivating a relationship with the community. So those in North Philadelphia Peace Park, they took the land and over a time cultivated a relationship with the community. And what I was you know, really happy about an event. That, and maybe Sister Lavina, you could probably develop it better than I. You had PHA come trying to slap some buildings that the members of Peace Park had been working. They ran out. Sister Lavina, can you, if I'm not putting you on the spot, could you develop that incident that happened and how, and for me to show how that is another part of the warfare and war strategy that's being utilized in Peace Park, if I made myself clear.
Yes. Real quick, I do want to touch on what the last caller said. I think it's important for all of us to really know who Carlos Cook was. And I think, mm-hmm. as Garveyites, a lot of us on the call know. But for those who don't know that are listening, Carlos implemented what we're talking about. When people did not want to support the black stores in their neighborhood, you had people that were under Garvey, you know, Carlos, they would go to their homes and say, hey, you know, you passed the house, the store, I'm sorry, you need to support. Don't go to the Asian store, support your brother or sister. You got like, it was like three visits. You didn't want to get to two or three. You definitely didn't want to get to three. So that was a way that we held each other accountable. So I really like, and thank you, brother, the caller, for calling in and mentioning Carlos Cook, because that is something that we have been speaking about, holding each other accountable and making sure we put things in place to make sure that people are following these guidelines so we can eliminate those who don't belong in our community. Now, to answer your question, Brother Rich, with the park, we said, okay, we're cultivating the land. We have to develop things. And the homes, there were some homes, and we said, okay, you know what? We have to stop the drug trafficking. We have to stop the sex trafficking, the human trafficking. So a lot of times people don't deal with those issues that we have and the contradictions amongst each other, but we wanted to address it head on. And we said, we can't allow this to happen while we're here. We will not watch this. So we cleaned up the houses. We started to put things into place. We made sure that, you know, our programs were being ran. The weather is changing. We have to make sure there are safe spaces. So, you know, THA had, they came out, they raided it. Now, I will mention this. The time when they raided us, they were meeting, the mayor and stuff was meeting with the encampment folks. They were meeting with others, with some white people, but they raided our houses. So it did not make sense. Where, you know what we're doing. We're here, we're feeding people, we're counseling people, we're in a community. The community supports us, but then you raid us. Why would you do that? You know, that's something I still think about to this day. But the neighbors had reached out and said, you know, the police are here. A lot of police cars, and they are raiding. And what we did was we went out there, some of the PG folks, which you have to be able to protect and defend what you take. And we wholeheartedly believe in our power. So we went and we told them, like, you need to stop what you're doing now. You need to stop. And if you continue to board it up, these boards are just going to come down. We're not going to allow you to take what is essential to the healing and the growth of the people in this very community. The people want this, so the people will have this. And that was kind of our position. It's always been our position. So we continue now to work on the houses. We have been rehabilitating them. We have been having people come out. The community is involved. You have volunteers from all over that come to assist. They come to help because they understand, like, there's goodwill and there's power when we move collectively and not in an individualistic perspective. So that's how we've been working on the homes and on the land. But when you start feeding yourself, you have to create solutions. When you know you're at war, you know, people are warring with you and, you know, you're not necessarily winning as a whole, you have to do what you can and you have to take those small victories, right? So if you know your food is being poisoned, how about you grow some, right? That's one way to address, right, to combat what they're doing with your food. If you know your water is contaminated, now it's like, okay, how can you get water? Where can you go get water from to make sure that you purify it? Like, what can you do? Who has it? That's one thing, right? You have to say, okay, you know what? I can't give you the power to fire me. I can't let you control how I eat, how I sleep, how I exist. Like, I can't let you do that. So now I have to create my own business. So what we did was we created businesses, our own business, and then we helped other people create their business so they could make sure that they could sustain and be okay financially. So when you're at war, you have to say, okay, how am I at war? How are these people attacking me? And then you have to come up with some really sustainable solutions. And you have to train. Just like they train, you have to train mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually. You have to be prepared and you have to teach others the same thing. So for us, is you have to come to the land, you have to teach something. You can't just take, but you have to give as well. So those relationships that we built amongst the group, amongst the community, we share and we hope that it spreads to different communities, right? We hope that this is a model that Black people can follow globally, right? Internationally, because this is how you start to fight actively in a war that's against you. So,
excuse me, because the thing that, you know, what y'all did, Elliot, and the thing that they did that, like, struck me, and Sister Lavinia mentioned it, is, I'm one of those Cabralites in a way, you know, in this moment, you know, winning the hearts and mind of the people, right? You have to do that. If you don't win the hearts, you're not in war. You're not at war. You are a gang. If you can't win the hearts and mind, and the thing that I'm celebrating is that community felt responsible enough, because they weren't available. They weren't around. The administrative organizing members weren't around. The community said, "Whoa, what's going on here?" That means that they, as the sister was saying, they seen what they're doing is of value. That's what we have to do. If we don't win the hearts and minds of the ones that are immediately around us, we're not necessarily engaged. And not saying that they're going to pick up, you know, Brother Carl, I hear you in my head. You know, a lot of them ain't going to pick up nothing to protect you, but they will let you know, I don't like this guy either. So I'm going to let you know they're coming after you so you can do what you're going to do. And that is enough to have that kind of support, because they become an extension of the community that you're building. And I take that hopefully as the mechanism of recognizing being at warfare and creating liberated space where you are. And I think Brother Carl, you made reference to, now it has, morphed into another area, right? Peace Park West, possibly Peace Park Germantown. This is how you create and expand space. That's the point I was just making.
And real quick, I will say, because I want people to understand this, it is Black men, Black women, and Black children working together. And that is the difference. That makes it a whole difference in the world. We have to work together.
Yes.
We cannot be separated.
Yes.
So you will not find me or hear me attacking Black men. You will not find the Black men, which includes all of you on the call, attacking Black women. We will all hold each other accountable. We will be honest, but we will do it with love and with respect. And there is no way we will not work together.
Okay.
So us working together is the example. That is the strong foundation. And that is how we continue to show the community that we are a part of the community. And even those that are not, that don't live there in that immediate area, we're still going to do what we can. And we still have love for each other. We're still going to work together. So that is something that we must remember, because there is too many gender wars with too much division that is happening, and we will not grow. We cannot combat anything if we are opposite, if we are against each other. So I just wanted to say that.
And we all know who plants those seeds among our people too.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to change things just a little bit, because Professor Jones and Brother Obi brought up the situation about being at war. We see now, under this current political environment, that the element that's always been here, almost since we've been here, is starting to raise their head again. The only difference is this. White folks, both liberal and conservative, knew that these people existed. A lot of them were well-funded because they went under other names. They used your tax money. And if ever you had any Black news organization that had the heart to do any investigation, they would see that some of these groups had legitimate names that they would use. So-and-so gun club, so-and-so community organization, whatever. They didn't go under the name KKK when they was using tax money to develop their organizations, to purchase weapons, things of that nature. But these organizations were allowed to foster and grow because their target was always in the back of their mind was you. But now, and the ancestors always got ways of working things out in our favor, these same people now, history is almost repeating itself as far as I'm concerned, because they're going to start pointing the weapons at one another. We see it in Portland. In Denver, it happened the other a couple of days ago, where a couple of guys got shot, supposedly on the left and on the right. I don't follow all that stuff that they be talking about, but groups on the left and on the right was firing at one another. We see it here with this group of 13 white men, the Wolverine men, or whatever they called themselves, that was planning to kidnap that Democratic governor. And I'm quite sure they weren't going to read her no bedtime stories. They was going to end her life. And it's kind of funny to the listening audience that they captured these 13 dangerous criminals plotting to assassinate a elected official without incident. I didn't see nobody riddled with bullets like they did with Breonna Taylor and other people. I didn't see no doors kicked in and the house looked like Swiss cheese. They captured all these men without a shot being fired. Ooh, what's up with that? Mm. And here's another thing. Because our people get caught up in all this Trump, Biden crap, or the Republicans is our enemies, the Democrats is our friends. That one white boy that was part of that Wolverine man was out of Wilmington or Newark, Delaware. He was pardoned by the Democratic governor in Delaware about a year ago for some serious crimes. But you'll never get no black news organizations to look into why was he pardoned. How did he get a pardon for these serious crimes? Maybe the voice of the African-American community here in Philadelphia, maybe they'll look into it. They got some hard-hitting people on that station. Maybe they'll look into it. Because they might be part of the problem. You know, let me say this before I turn it over to our guests. You know, and this stuff, just like Sister Lavinia said, this stuff really rubs me the wrong way. You had a football player here for the Eagles about a month ago before the season started, made national news, DeSean Jackson, when he tweeted out, he didn't tweet out no racial slurs, racial epithets. He tweeted out that the original Hebrews were black and he was publicly lynched, had to make two statements about it, had to write an apology, it promised to take the so-called Jews over to Auschwitz at the end of the season. He was fined so much money. And then black elected officials, like some of the people we were talking about tonight, Anthony Williams, Vincent Hughes, several others, got on phones with Jewish organizations and publicly castigated him. And then jumped on the NAACP leadership here and said that they wanted the leader out along with the whole board. Now, I don't know of no, the NAACP, come on. The Urban League, those groups don't really hold no weight with me. But the fact is, you got other religious or so-called cultural entities that determine who's the leadership of black groups. And you got these black charlatans to go along
with.
Now, the thing, another thing to look at is he was made to do all of this. And I think the last part was he had to take some Jews to Auschwitz at the end of the year so they can show him how he's wrong. But a couple of days ago, you had a white linebacker for the Eagles. They uncovered that he tweeted out racial epithets on his social media, called black people the N-word on two occasions. He just issued a statement that, oh, I'm sorry. And I don't even know whether he wrote the statement. The Eagles might have wrote it. I didn't hear them saying black elected officials saying nothing to him, roasting him, saying that he ought to take a group of that he need to go over to Cape Coast or Elmina to see to get some sensitivity training. I didn't see anything. I didn't see the black elected officials say anything about it. These people are a disgrace, man. And we just can't afford to have them standing in front of our people, having them some sort of example for our children. Are you kidding? Well, let me get a couple calls in here, because I'll be broke a blood vessel thinking about those clowns. Let's go to 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot. How you doing, Elliot?
How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing fine. I praise be to Allah, Brother Richard, and to your, all your singing requests, the beautiful sister and all the brothers that's on guests with you, Brother Elliot. Happy greetings to all y'all. Man, good show tonight as usual, Brother Elliot. Y'all brothers and sisters, you know, bringing out the hard-hitting facts tonight. Elliot, let me say this first about, you know, you said about this, how you don't fall for that stuff about the left and the right, the conservative, the liberal. I don't know if you and Richard and your distinguished guests saw the commercial that Cindy McCain made, that John McCain's widow. You know, she made a commercial for Biden. And Elliot, how many times have I said this to y'all, you and Richard, and the Time from the Wicked listener audience? See, we as black folks, we get caught up in the stupid stuff about this Republican, Democrat, artist, and Honorable Elijah Muhammad told us 40 years ago that's their white brother, man. You know, they play them games with us. We the ones get upset. They friends. They talk all that conservative, but at the end of the day, they go out and drink together. They buddies. Well, on the commercial, Cindy McCain said it clear as day. You'll see it on TV. All y'all that's listening, you'll see the commercial where Cindy McCain said, well, you know, John and Joe, they had some heated arguments on the Senate floor. They had some heated arguments, but after those arguments, they would go right off to lunch together. I don't know. Do we get it? Do we get it? That's what I'm saying, Elliot. I mean, these people are telling you and stuff. Like I said, here in Philadelphia, that's the terrestrial radio station that you just was referring to, Brother Elliot. You had the old so-called Democrat congressman, former congressman, if you will, that's supposed to be friends of black people, Bob Brady. He said right on terrestrial radio here in this state on several occasions that he don't agree with Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell, how they so different politically. They're on one side, but we get along well after we have our heated arguments on the floor. We go out to dinner, us and our wives. I'm saying to myself, black folks, do you get it? This is all about maintaining white supremacy and white dominance. Do you get it? I mean, it must go about here. Something about people here is like I don't know, man. I just sometimes, I don't know. And as far as, like you said, all about this situation with the Jews, I my reference last week, I mentioned to Brother Jay DeCecco, and I don't know if you and Richard heard and the brothers and sisters you have on as guests. Well, up in New York, when the mayor again threatened to shut down certain things, the Jews had outraged again. They had a big, I guess, for lack of a better word, Elliot, they had a big blowout where they were threatening violence. The Hasidic Jews up there, it came across the news the other day, I think on Tuesday or Wednesday, they threatened violence if de Blasio even dare to shut them down. They say they'd be damned if they're going to be shut down and they can't go to their synagogues for the service and everything like that. I mean, they threatened violence, but again, I didn't hear no us about it. I don't know whether de Blasio backing off now and won't shut them down if this epidemic gets to the level that they said it would get to. But I know the Jews threaten violence if they, if they get shut down again. So I mean, it's amazing how these groups, like you said, Elliot, they have special privileges. They can do what they do and continue to get away with it and stuff, man. You see the same thing here in Philadelphia, like you said. These Zionists control these so-called black radio stations and stuff. Tell them who to have as guests, who to have as hosts. It's just one fiasco after another, man. You know, like you said, this brother was made the emasculated Deshaun Jackson in front of the whole world and stuff. And yet this white boy can call us the N-word, and the one white boy previous to him several years with Riley Cooper, they issued some bogus apology, and that's the end of the story. But Deshaun Jackson, Minister Rodney, they got the bow and slate and stuff. It's just the beat just goes on and on. And like you said, this stuff couldn't happen, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, if you didn't have these slimy, sellout, traitorous Negroes that's in office, these so-called black politicians. I made this very clear. As long as black people out of our political ignorance, and then some cases when we know better and we continue to do the same things, political stupidity, we're going to continue to get what we get. As long as we keep voting for these sorry Negroes on a city, state and federal level, we're going to get what we're going to get, because these, like you said, they are enemies of the black community. They are not friends of our people. They might have black skin, like the late Gracie Sublime Moore used to say, they might be your kinfolk, they might be your skin folk, but they sure as hell ain't your kinfolk, you know? And as long as we keep on supporting them kind of individuals, male and female, Well, we're going to get what we're going to get, man, because they do not have our interests at heart. And it's as simple as that, man. Their policies proven, like you said about this epidemic, Elliot. Like you said, all these black businesses, for some didn't, weren't able to come back because of they lost so many days of business. But yet all these Asian and poppy stores was allowed to remain open in black communities and stuff. Police would ride by while they selling the little shots of liquor, selling Lucy's. They wouldn't hide. Nothing was in full view. But yet, brothers and sisters can open up their businesses and stuff. The nail salons, the barber's shops, the little, even some of the few blacks that had little grocery stores at that time, little stores, the few that do have, we won't have many of these black communities now anyway, but the few that had them, they was closed. But yet, the poppy stores and the Asian stores were allowed to remain open, selling Lucy's and alcohol and everything else. I mean, you know, it's insane, man. This double standard and unfairness has got to stop, Brother Elliot. But like you said, it's not going to stop till we deal with these traitors in our community, man. Get them out of office at the very least. And on the flip side of that, if the ones that's in office continue to betray our people, they're gonna have to be dealt with one way or another because they are dangerous for our people, man. They do damage to black people, man. I can't make it no more clear than that, you know.
Well, thank you for your call. Any of the panelists want to say anything in reference to its call?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, go ahead.
One of the things that, you know, and it's really simple, you know, in regards to all these different things is, you know, there's an old saying, you find out who your rulers are or who your bosses are by who you can't critique in society. And basically, you know, the relationship between blacks and Jews is illustrated.
Mm-hmm.
Every single time a conflict comes up when, you know, you can't critique them, but then, you know, like you said, black politicians and black leadership is still bought and paid for with Jewish ownership. And because of these things, you know, that's why the money and the control and the power is what matters. And until we have those things, nobody will be accountable to us. So
exactly.
So once we make people accountable, then we can start initiating those types of changes. But until then, you know, we'll just be sitting in the same boat, angry and mad and complaining about how they're treating us and saying it's unfair. What they're saying is, yeah, it's not, you know, our system of morals is what's messed up because our morals is about right and wrong. Their morals is about who has the power and who has the power to yield and wield their power. And if you don't have power, your morals don't matter. And that's where we get stuck at.
And now let me say this last in closing. And the brother is absolutely right because what he said just now, that's what Mr. Rodney said, pretty much the same thing. They got him in trouble. He said Deshaun Jackson attacked by these Zionist so-called Jews against Deshaun Jackson. It was just what Minister Rodney was saying. He said they show who can. He said the attacks on him shows who controls you and stuff like that. Because how they came out with sex vicious against Deshaun Jackson just for making that comment about black people being the true Hebrew Israelites and stuff, how they was attacked. But like I said, these white Jews are cowards because, like I say, they don't attack white people. White people, not only do they say horrible things about them, they commit acts of violence and stuff. But you don't see them coming out taking ass in the New York Post, the New York Times and everything and stuff. Even when black people say, like I said, when black people say just stuff critically of them and stuff, they come out with the anti-Semitism, or white people say hateful, vile things about them and commit acts of violence and stuff. They know what you saw down in Charlottesville where those white bigots was talking about something, the Jews will not replace us. You didn't have one word from the ADL, the Jewish Federation, AIPAC, none of them said nothing. They know damn well that these white racists don't give a damn about them, but they know black people are a soft target. Like the brother just said, they look at us as powerless, so they can attack us no matter what. We sit there and say we don't like the way our Palestinian brother and sister is treating over there in occupied Palestine. And by the way, many of those Palestinians are dark-skinned people. We don't see them in the media. So I got a picture of a Palestinian sister. Like I said, Ellie, she looks just like any other black woman you see walking down the street. You didn't see the word Palestinian. You don't see them on TV, all this. So that's that racial dynamic there. But like I said, you say that you don't like how they treat our Ethiopian Jewish brothers, Ethiopian brothers and sisters over there. You're anti-Semite. But like I said, they look at us as weak, powerless, and stuff like the brother said. So that's why they continue to attack us and come after us till we get to a position we can tell them to go to hell and stuff. And until it happens, we're going to continue to get unfairly tarnished and beaten down and emasculating our black men and women in public who dare stand up against them. You know, so we got to change that dynamic. But anyway, thanks for your time, brother. And Ellie, could you put me on hold? I just sit back and listen to the rest of the show.
I'll do that.
Thanks, good brother.
Brother Elliot,
mm-hmm.
if I can, if
yes,
I
sir.
Can speak to what the brother was just talking about.
Yeah.
I like to say this, that they're not supposed to, in public, expose one another. They expose one another for things that they may say. When I mean that, I'm talking about your team. Or should I say the Europeans? They expose one another in private, but they never do it in public. That's why they'll never take out an ad against each other when it comes to what they say about one another. And they're not supposed to, because they have to show a united front. Only with us, they can do that. You know what I'm saying? And we allow them to do much of the things that they do to us as a people. And I know there are a number of our people who may be listening to this program who don't agree with that. But they can only do to you what you allow them to do to you. And I feel as though in just the wisdom I'm gaining is the older that I get, you know, we give them too much power.
Exactly.
Even when we use the term like white supremacy, I always say so-called white supremacy. White supremacy according to who, yeah?
Brother, right. Their strategies and their ability to implement, when we talk about that more than we talk about how do we fortify the relationship to where their offensive does not crumble our defense. When we talk about and when we provide them with the point that you're making, and it gets, because a lot of time we spend more time giving them energy on what yep. they're doing to us than spending yep. that same amount of time and giving examples of what we are doing and what we need to fortify to do to prevent them from doing what they're doing.
Thank you.
And I don't know yep. why. I mean, it's a part of the yep. psychology, you know, mm-hmm. but it's evident. And that in our communication with each other, whether it's public or private, has mm-hmm. to change. Because if we're just whining mm-hmm. and providing examples, we're also mm-hmm. not, oh, we're saying we don't know how to make ourselves stronger.
And you become, and Brother Richard, you become a complaint-driven people. Everything you're doing is complaining. You are not spending any time on solutions or viable strategies. Like I said, this is why we're being warred upon, because we're giving them all of our power, you know what I'm saying, by what it is and how it is that we see them in the so-called position of white so-called privilege, white so-called supremacy. We're giving them all this power, and we're not spending the time on doing the work on ourselves to fortify our position against such attacks as this. But we're talking about complaining. We're becoming complaint-driven people. You know what I'm saying? And when you start to complain about things, that leads to another bad habit that many of our people are developing. And I got to be very, very honest. And this is excuse. Then the excuses come. You got an avalanche of excuses why you can't do this, or why you can't do that, or why we're not able to do this, or when we're not able to do that. I'm tired as an African hearing other black people talk about what we can't do. Stop telling me what we can't do and start telling me what we can do. And that's what it's boiling down to. And people like that, I'm distancing myself. I'm trying to put myself around people and have people surround themselves around me about what we can do to fortify our position as a people, and to not even reclaim, but to walk in our power. Mm. And that's what it's about.
We're going to take a brothers and sister, do you have about 20 more minutes? We're going to take a brief break. When we come back, we're going to...
I'm here for the duration.
Good. We're going to start winding down the discussion. But what I want to do in the last portion of the program is focus in on this violence and some solutions, because the ideal of the black captains that Professor Carlton Jones have been putting out there, I think, is one excellent solution. But let's talk about some of this when we come back from break. In the time left, you can get involved in the discussion by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're talking with our guest this evening, educator, filmmaker, Professor Carlton Jones, activist and organizer, Brother Oba Olayinka, and sister activist, Lavinia Davis. Join the conversation. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard the special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me have held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. Amen. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP or the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I said that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the slave theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we're black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put him anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Encourage, let me just say this before our time winds up, and that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lorne Greene sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip. And you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are, and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back. The time for an awakening is 9:40 here in the city of Philadelphia. And you can join us in the time that we have left. We're in conversation with our three guests, educator, filmmaker, Professor Carl Tone Jones, activist and organizer, Brother Oba Olainka, and activist and organizer, Sister Lavinia Davis. Again, you can get involved in the time we have left by joining us at 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. I wanted to talk about this plague of violence in our community. We know that this country is violent. These people established this country in violence. But I'm not talking about Europeans. I'm talking about in our communities. A couple of days ago, a disgrace happened. All of this violence to me is a disgrace, but I mean, it was really compounded the other day as far as I'm concerned. I think it was in South or Southwest Philadelphia.
Southwest.
They had a vigil for somebody that had been murdered, and families was out there with their children. And I think it might have been a couple of these do-nothing politicians, and shots rang out at the vigil. The people were scrambling, looking for their children. I don't know whether Sister Lavinia or Brother Oba or Professor Jones, whether you saw that. You did?
Yes, I know about it.
Okay. This type of stuff got to be stopped. We got to come up with solutions, and we're going to have to do it, because these so-called leadership, this crap that they roll out every so often, gun buybacks that puts money into these white supermarkets' hands by giving people $50 or whatever to go to the supermarket, gun buybacks and more police in your community is not going to do it. Some of the ideas that have been coming up, we've had brothers and sisters on this program that has been implementing ideas in the city of Philadelphia. Professor Carl Jones has the ideal of the black captains I want you to kind of explore that on the program in the time we have left. And Brother Oba, Sister Lavinia, if you have any things you want to throw into the mix, let me go to these two calls that's been waiting first before we deal with that. Let's go to caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from? Caller, black man. Let's put him back on hold. I think he might have stepped away from the mic. Let's go to 646.
Hey, what's happening, my brother Elliot Richard, and to your guests?
How is that?
I'd just first like to say God bless America. You know, it's interesting that you just brought up in regards to the violence in our community. I'm going to go on record right now and say that we haven't seen nothing yet. I mean, that may be the prelude to what's to come. Because, you know, one of the things that I've noticed that these politicians are not addressing is the crisis of homelessness that's about to hit our communities. Now, me, myself, as a landlord, I'm telling y'all right now, there's not going to be anything in place for at least another year and year and a half to help these people out. And it may not even be that quick if this savage gets back in office. So I would just like to ask your guests, what are they doing and what are their associates doing to prepare for what's about to happen in the next couple of months? Because the moratorium is over in December, and it don't look like this thing is getting any better based on the behavior. Now, I know my man Joe, he was talking earlier about the behavior in my city, New York, of the Jew. Hey, listen, Jew do whatever they want in New York City. So that's done caused some increase in the virus, and they're trying to keep it under wraps. And it's just the whole nature of how this whole thing is being addressed. And, I just see things getting real, real bad for our community, or what little community we have. So I was wondering if your guests could maybe talk a little bit about that.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, first of all, good question. I think, though, that my response to that is we basically are relying on politicians, because we don't want the responsibility of fixing what's wrong ourselves.
Mm.
And that's just the bottom line. We see, when we take ownership over that, and me and Brother Oba was talking about this earlier, we take ownership over, you know, whatever the issue is, and we address it. If we don't want to take the L, we don't want the L to be attached to our name. So it's easier to say, I'm gonna vote for this politician, I'm gonna call to this politician. And when things don't get done, say the politician is the reason it didn't get done. You know, in terms of community, the black community was the only one begging everybody to keep schools open so the children could have free lunches during the COVID virus. Nobody else was doing it. Everybody else was going internal. Hold on, brother, let you talk. You know, everybody else is, you know, figuring out. They have communities set up. They have safe houses. You know what black people are doing right now? Black people are showing them, you know, our vacations, our best life, things of that nature. And, you know, unfortunately, we don't have enough peace parks. You know, we don't have enough people to take the matter seriously until it becomes an epidemic or crisis. I was just last night in a restaurant in Wildwood, New Jersey, listening to white people talk about preparing for a race war. When you bring that up to black people, like literally talking about it in front of me. You know, when you bring that up to black people, it's like, oh, well, I wish they would come down here. Wish they would what? What are you going to do if they did come down here? What ammunition? The same kids that are out there killing each other are your only defense. It's the only reason why they don't come in the black neighborhood. Because they're the only ones willing to shoot somebody. You know, and when it comes to the rest of this stuff, see, I get tired of the politicking and the talking and the articulation and the cute ways we phrase it. When bottom line is, we don't have no balls as a community. They've been shut, they've been cut off. And so when it comes to the protections and when it comes to all the nitty gritty, the handwork that gets done, you know, listen, I've worked with Sister Lavinia. I see the days when she has to deal with her own physical issues, her own, and I hope you know why I'm putting this out there, sis, her own struggles in life and still show up for the people. You know what I'm saying? And the people, you know, we get the flack, we get the backlash from the community and so forth, and we, especially from the bourgeois, the owners, who could do more. You know, brother, you just said you own properties, and what are you doing to help out to make sure?
See, first of all, I didn't even come at you like that. You know what I mean? Let me finish, because it's a key
point.
But
you just cut me off.
This is a key point. No, brother. What I was saying to you was asking what were y'all doing based on the things that you were saying tonight of the good programs and the good work that you were doing. Were you doing anything to help the people, or are you in a position to help the people? And you misconstrued what I'm saying. Now, let me tell you what I'm doing. Okay. What I'm doing is I'm making sure that every tenant that I'm involved with and has young children, they eat, and that they don't have to worry about my group placing them outside of their home because they can't pay a position or a portion of their money, brother. Please don't question what I'm doing and the type of love that I show my tenants. Any one of my tenants will tell you when their child is hungry or they hungry, they can call me and they go eat. I go out my house to feed them. You understand what I'm saying? So when you start talking about I interrupted you in regards to adding on that most of these black families use the school system for a babysitting service also, I think you got the wrong Negro you talking to.
Well, Jay, let me tell you this.
Wait a minute.
You gonna wait a minute? Now, if you was listening to the program, you heard the sister talk about what they're doing over there at the organization Peace Park and several different communities in Philadelphia, where they're doing urban gardening, educational programs, and other things. And these two other brothers are helping her. So it's if you had been listening, maybe you tuned in late. They had been discussing.
All I did was ask about the homeless. I heard a portion of what she was saying. My concern is the homeless, which leads to violence that puts the family in danger. That's what I'm talking about, Elliot, because when a person doesn't have a place to eat or a place to lay their head, they now become violent to the elders, to the community. That's why I never kick nobody out. I don't care about somebody not being able to pay a portion of the rent, because I tell you this, Elliot, I'm intelligent enough to deal with Section 8 or any other program that will assist my people in paying for their housing, because I understand the dilemma that we as African people face in these communities. That's all, Brother Elliot.
Can I interject?
Go ahead. Yes.
Okay, so I think this is a perfect example right here of how our youth get caught up, and not just our youth, our people get caught up in the streets and things get taken to another level, because even as civilized as we are and as passionate, right, because we're having this discussion and there is some miscommunication because we love our people. Everyone on this call right now loves their people and we're trying to find solutions, but it can go left so fast. So as I'm working in the community, I have to have empathy and sympathy for my people, because I know at any point in time, I may react in a way that I should not react. And we just seen how fast that could happen on a call, right? No, and I know no one meant any disrespect to the other, but we're able to, you know, come to our senses. We're able to calm down. We're able to get clarity. But a lot of people were not given those tools. So if you don't have those tools, if you weren't shown that, you don't have access to that, how would you know? And then you have people walking around that are hurt. They were hurt. There's so much pedophilia in our community that when we talk about, all right, let's talk about this not being done and people don't have this and they don't have that, we don't touch on the pedophilia. So when these young people grow up and they say, nobody came to save me, nobody cared about me, so why should I care about who I hurt? Why should I care? And maybe that's not the right mentality, but who are we to say what's right and wrong? So until we actually invest in each other and try to understand each other mentally and emotionally, we're no better than those who are offending, right? So I think that what just happened should give us a moment of clarity, right? So for us to understand, okay, you know what? How do we approach the young people out here? How do we approach these adults out here that may need anger management, that may not feel loved, that may not feel appreciated, that may not feel heard? Because what happens too often is we start operating out of pride and ego. And that's where we have to shut it down. So, you know, I didn't really want to interject, but I think that's important for us to always remember when we're dealing with each other and when we're dealing with people that may not be on the same page as us right now.
No, I appreciate that balance. I appreciate that balance in your interjection. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish your statement.
She was right on point, and I appreciate it, sis. And I take heed to what you said, because it was a very honest analysis that you put forward.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
Thank you for your contribution, man.
Okay.
You know what? You kind of touched on this issue of violence in our community, Sister Lavinia, with what you said. This is a problem that we have to face, whether it's, you know, our people don't have jobs, whether it's driven by drugs and the selling of drugs, or whether somebody is just demented and want to knock old people over the head or carjack, whatever is going on. It deals directly with the mental health of our communities, and we have to find some way to stop it. The watchman in our communities is not interested in stopping it, because the so-called powers that be wants it to be this way in our communities. But we cannot have it this way in our communities. For our own well-being, we can't. We got to come up with solutions. I think that what you're doing over there is a perfect solution to help people that you're coming in contact with, and ones that will be drawn to Peace Park. Because if it's going into other neighborhoods, people are going to be drawn to it. And maybe when they're drawn to it, the idea of the black captains can be introduced to them. Because I think that's an excellent idea, Professor Jones. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, the black captains I was part of the origins of the black captains, but, you know, my brother B.F. Nkrumah and brother Eric Keith Grimes Shamari were pretty much the catalyst behind the black captains. And what the black captains represented, it wasn't just the, you know, security part, but basically it just represented of the presence of a black male, the black male's presence being reinvigorated into the community, you know, from a stance of being a leader in the community and basically, you know, forming a team and a task force. Unfortunately, and this ties into what I was previously addressing the last caller, you know, and I'm not trying to drag things on, but, and kudos to him for the work he's done, you know, because I don't know. When I ask that question, I don't know what you do. So it's not the assumption that you've done anything. I don't know. But where is the
resources to continue things of that nature.
Yeah.
You know, that has to come from somewhere.
Yes.
You know, a brother earlier spoke on the purchasing choices and economic choices. Well, economically speaking, you know, everything that you need to protect you is going to cost you something. And until we're willing to pay that price, nothing else matters. And it seems as though we want someone else to come in and take care of it. The black captain, the idea of the black captain is to become, you know, a resource to the community. And that was the whole ordeal. As I said earlier, you know, I've been in several circles where I've heard of white supremacists or people who speak about white supremacists. Now I have no problem with identifying them because I know what they are and who they are. But they're talking about the November 3rd coup of this country or November 3rd attack. That's been, it's not even like closed. It's an open, it's not even an open secret. This is something they're talking about
mm-hmm.
in regard to attacking black people. And, you know, and we have to be vigilant to those things. And when we focus on other things, I think we are being passive about the threat that's in front of us in regards to our physical welfare. We're not going to have to worry about the homeless 2-3 months from now, because within the next 3 to 4 weeks, this whole country might be on fire. Everybody might be homeless in 3 to 4 weeks. You know, we don't have to worry about, you know, that, you know, those other issues if we don't address the threat that's right on our doorstep. And so these are the ways that I don't move in a way where I pretend like, you know, if somebody is, you know, I'm watching somebody load up a pistol across the street that I might not be a target. You know what I'm saying? So in regards to the black captain, it's needed, but unfortunately it's hard to sustain because you can't sustain it when people have full-time jobs and then have to get off their full-time job, do a full-time job for the community. That's mm-hmm. why most of the grassroots organizations fail.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So it's just, you know, just putting it out there.
Well, Brother Oba, anything on that particular subject while we're on it? Brother Oba, you still there? I don't know, we must have lost him. You know, but before we go this evening, I just want to kind of mention something that you just just kind of closed out your conversation or your comments with just a second ago, Professor Jones, is the need for our people to really organize and not be fragmented in these communities. And it becomes more important now, especially the environment that we're in, that we become more organized and become a watchman for our people and for these communities. Because things could very well deteriorate after this November 3rd election. With this mail-in voting, they already talk about problems that's going to happen. And it's obvious this problem is going to happen. Because, you know, with the way they have been running things before with their election process, almost hours after the election, they almost could project the winner. It's not going to be like that with this mail-in voting. It might be quite a while before they determine some type of winner. And whoever they determine that wins, what's going to happen to the quote-unquote loser? So, you know, our people really have to be aware. And you don't really look at this system that we're under and Europeans that have fostered this system. Our people, they're not geared. They haven't been taught to look at these people like that with a historical perspective. They look at them how they treat them. Oh, Bobby's nice because he's nice to me on the job. Or, you know, I got friends of mine. We go out for drinks or dinner. You know, they look at this thing from a personal basis, and you can't do that. We have to look at the situation we're in from a historical perspective because this stuff has been going on for hundreds of years. In fact, since we came in contact with Europeans. The Europeans that did this stuff to our ancestors initially is no longer here, but their children's children's children are here, and they're doing the same thing. It might be a little more sophisticated, might not be as raw and in your face as their ancestors, but it's the same outcomes, you being oppressed. So if we don't look at this situation from another lens and see that we need to protect ourselves, I don't know what it's going to take. Richard?
You know.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Sister Benny.
My grandmother used to say, I tell people all the time, she would say, praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. I think that we have to get to a point where we are working to sustain, then working to thrive, but also being prepared. So I want to make sure that we definitely answer the brother's question that asked about the homelessness. There are things that we can do right now, right, as we prepare for whatever may happen, meaning we have to talk to these churches.
Yes.
Because it's safe. No more damn excuses. Let people stay in the churches. When we say, okay, if you still believe in your politicians and you say, I'm going to run a vote, talk to these politicians and make them open up these buildings that have been closed for years, for months, whatever, all of these schools. They're trying to, especially in South Philly, change the schools into apartments.
I know it.
There is a lot of space, empty buildings that we don't have to reinvent wheels when it comes to stuff. We can utilize what is right around us. And if people want to get together and do petitions and come, you know, come together around something like that, okay, put that into motion. Talk to the churches as a collective. Talk to your politicians as a collective. And these are tangible things that we can do to address the homelessness immediately, right? This can be done. It's not impossible. Next, you know, speaking to what Brother Carl Tone said, we got to study too. We got to be prepared, but we got to know that nothing is new, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about what may happen, right, around November 3rd, a couple years ago, I used to, like, research on these revolutions all the time, and I think we have not studied a lot of the history, as you said. Study the Purple Revolution. Study the Blue Revolution. Study the Orange Revolution. A couple years ago, when Trump was going into office, we seen that there were so many riots, right? Light riots, protests. People made these threats. And then when Hillary lost, everybody said, oh my goodness, the shit is going to hit the fan. Excuse my language. But she, what happened was she got exposed. Her email got leaked. And then people said, wait a minute, we were ready to go to war for you, but we can't do this yet. We got to see what's happening. I think that that may be the same thing that happens this time. More things, because even though the system is being, like, you know, slowly picked away, those in power, white supremacy does not want to be destroyed. They don't want to leave. So, yes, they're fighting with each other, and this is the worst it's ever been, but they have to find a way to try to keep their power.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't want us to have, like, this whole all-out war and understand, like, that we've been fighting a class war as well. Race first, but a class war. They don't want that to be exposed. So right now they're trying to figure out how to do things. But I think studying these revolutions and seeing the steps that they have taken, that gives us an advantage. And that is where we need to learn how to strategize and get prepared. So, you know, we do have a lot of work to do. We also have to be prepared for whatever may come, but we want to make sure that we continue to build. We have to keep building, and we have to find ways to do it. And, you know, like Brother Crosshome said, these things do cost money. But since we know it costs money, what are we going to do? We're going to build some businesses, right? When the black businesses, when the stores got shut down, like you said, Brother Elliot, we made a decision to open up the land to have black vendors come there So yeah, you don't have a storefront, and maybe you can't do, you know, whatever you were doing, selling your stuff online or whatever, but you know, you can come here once a month and vend your stuff. So there are little things like that that we can do to help each other and to make sure that we are supporting each other and creating a space. Because too often we want to take everything for ourselves. We don't want to lend our brother or sister a hand. And that is the biggest problem ever right now. So.
And to throw my two cents on that, going to those the vending that over Peace Park, because Elliot, I didn't know that you can have a certain type of popsicle that is got octane in it. You know, I'm like, what? Huh? Oh, <yeah? laughs> A popsicle?
You needed something to get your motor running, Richard, as fast as you'd be going all over the city. With no car.
I was just surprised. I mean, in different forms and whatever. Okay. And people were buying it. The food and if you didn't want to be on that side, the other side where you can get they got me on the, what's that, something berry and sea moss and, oh my goodness. But the example that she's saying as far as creating your own space, And the point that Brother Carl made, in the sense of being able to be realistic about what we're dealing with, and that's like so important. And again, using in the context of warfare, you have to define your terrain. I mean, you know, I mean, they got all these strategists, you know, which is most of the time they always use Asians or German or, you know, some other type of strategies, but there's African strategists, even locally, you know, have been able to overcome. So, you know, these are the things we have to be, we are doing. Ain't no have to be, we are doing. We just have to continue to fortify what we're doing.
Listen, I want to thank all of you for joining us this evening. The door is always open to you to come back. Let us know new things going on in the community, new projects that you're working on. The door is always, I mean, you know that. I don't have to tell you that. The door is open to you all the time. Professor Jones, it's Lavinia and Brother Oba. But I guess Brother Oba is a newlywed, so I guess his bride probably must have told him to get off the phone because he's not with.
No.
Oh, what's going on?
Come on now. You sense of being undercover now. She's like, what you doing?
No. I'm here. I just, like I said, I'm very, very, I'm happy.
You're breaking up a little bit.
To be such a guest, you know, on any time on time for what, you know, love, we got a lot of work and, you know, as people, invigorate as a people and to come up with and sure. So that our people can live not just beyond 2020, but live, you know, be able to see the 21st century come to a close.
Yeah, I think we're starting to lose your connection there, Brother Uba.
Okay. Yeah, but just, you know, some of the things that we really need to do as a people. So. Yeah, but thank you for allowing for me to once again, you know, be a guest on Knockaway. Appreciate it.
Yeah, well, you know, the door is always open to you, and you too, Professor Jones, and Sister Vinia. This is the first time you've been here, but I hope it ain't your last.
No, it's not. You know what? I did stop in a couple years ago, and it was brief because I was having an event, but we had Baba Sekou on a call with us.
Okay.
So, yes, I will definitely be back And yeah, thank you for having me. This was great. I'm glad that I was able to build with such strong brothers that are actually, you know, in the community doing the work and not just talking it. And Brother Rich doesn't give himself enough credit. He helps us a lot too. He's out here helping in different spaces, really involved in the community. So I definitely, you know, want to thank you for all of your support that you have given and shown to the park and, you know, to many other organizations as well. And, you know, inviting to this platform, you and Brother Elliot. So thank you.
Thank y'all.
All right. Thank y'all. We'll talk to you soon.
I shall be before you.
All right. See you.
Before you.
All right. Richard, interesting conversation with three strong activists, and I'd stress that word activists because they out here, they working. And, you know, I just want to thank you too, man, because, you know, I kid around with you, talk about you running here and there, but I mean, it's true, and you and the listening audience heard it from three independent voices that attest to the work of Brother Richard, and I'm just happy to have him be a part of this program. Because it's somebody that people can't accuse you of not doing anything. So, you know, your work speaks for itself. That's all.
Yes. Well, we're anytime we're doing it, and that's what's important. We keep on doing till we can't do no more.
Before we leave this evening, I just want to go over the lineup on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. Always interesting topics and dialogue on African Perspectives. That's with Brother Oshie, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 6 to 8 Monday evenings. Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed. That's 6 to 8 on Time for an Awakening Media. From 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central. With hosts Dr. Maria Kamban and Sister Nataki Kamban from 9 to 10, the first and third Monday of every month, Conversation Reparations, that's in COBA's program. On Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers, that's from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening Media. On Thursday, from 7 to 9, after 7 with host Shani B. On Friday, Time for Awakening is back from 8 until, and on Saturday, from 4 to 6 in the afternoon, Black Sister Talk with host Sister LaWanda Chambers, and from 7 to 9, the Elders of Sankofa with host Alfonso Watkins, and then Sunday, Time for an Awakening is back from 7 until. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. Such a small part of
little Tommy, he said he wants to be a fireman. And little Mary, she said she got to teach school. If we know all we say we know about the problem.
Children, to save the children.